We start by getting familiar with what it means to be mindful, and we are less concerned so much about what we are aware of and more concerned or interested in that we are aware. And so it's kind of turns the practice around a little bit for those of you who have done more directed practice, more focused practice, tending to one particular object or object-based practice, to be more interested in being aware of the awareness itself, to know that you're aware, and then what is that awareness aware of? And so along with the a little bit of what I shared this morning, the mindfulness itself, so being aware, and I use mindfulness and awareness interchangeably, so it's not something different when I'm using those words. I'm meaning them to be the same thing. And the mindfulness, as I spoke about this morning, is a neutral quality of mind. It can be used for wholesome purposes or unwholesome purposes. And I gave the example this morning of a thief who might be walking in a house very aware of what he or she is doing, very aware of the steps, trying to be quiet. But the purpose of that mindfulness or that awareness is not to understand the nature of their heart and mind, but to steal. And so the mindfulness that we're cultivating with this awareness of awareness is a mindfulness that's imbued with a particular perspective, a perspective of wisdom, the wisdom of the Buddha, wise view, which essentially in the understanding of the Eightfold Path, wise view is basically an understanding of what suffering is, what stress is, what is it that creates stress and suffering in our hearts and minds, and being aware of the difference between those qualities of mind that lead to suffering and those qualities of mind that lead our hearts and minds to ease and peace. And so this practice of wise mindfulness helps us to distinguish those two. And a simple way to think about, practically speaking, what does wise mindfulness feel like? It's a kind of awareness that's curious about our experience as experience, our experience as human experience. Sometimes that sounds like, it just sounds like nothing. You know, I'm aware of my experience as human experience being mindful. It's like, what good is that? How does that work? What does that even mean? But again, thinking back to that that thief wandering through the house, that thief is not interested in, well, what is the human experience of stepping? What is the human experience of reaching and touching? What is the human experience of what's going on in my heart and mind right now? Everything that they're doing is aimed towards taking something that's not theirs, an unwholesome action of heart and mind. And so the perspective of wise mindfulness has this curiosity, a kind of a connection to our experience in the present moment as an experience in the present moment. There's a big difference when we are mindful of something, for instance, like anger, in this way of being curious about, well, what is the experience of anger? There's a big difference between that and being angry, and maybe knowing that you're angry, but not having this curiosity about that experience itself. You're welcome to come up. So that's the perspective we're exploring in our mindfulness practice. And in any form of mindfulness practice, we are basically working to establish a thread of mindfulness in our experience, a thread of continuity of mindfulness in our experience. And there's different ways to do that. We can do that by turning our attention to some one experience and keeping our attention there and being curious about that experience. Like, what is the breath? How does the breath feel? What does an in-breath feel like? What does an out-breath feel like? That is being curious about the experience of breathing. And it's a way to cultivate mindfulness of breathing. There are other forms of practice, so that's a more directed form of practice. But there are other forms of practice that are more focused on or curious about the experience of mindfulness itself. What is it like to be aware? What is it like to be mindful in this way of being curious about experience? So our work is to stabilize mindfulness, and there are different ways to do that. So we might do it by directing our attention, or we might do it more by being aware that we're aware, and then having this receptive mode of this is what is being known right now. This is the experience being known right now. So not choosing what we're attending to, but being more receptive. And so this the practice that Saito Utejaniya teaches emphasizes the awareness. Am I aware? That's the first part of the exploration. Am I aware? Do I know that I'm aware? Right now, if you just kind of check in, like you're listening, perhaps, and hearing this question, and if you are listening and hearing this question, you do know that you're aware. You may not quite know how you know you're aware, but you know that you're aware, and that is where we begin. Just that simple, yeah, I know I'm aware. Maybe we don't quite know or touch into the feeling or experience of awareness that I was talking about this morning in the Dharma talk, and that's okay. It in my experience, this awareness of awareness, this sense of being able to know what it's like to be aware, grows over time with a sense of patience of this, yes, I know that I'm aware. Just that recognition over and over again. It's like our mind recognizing over and over again, this is awareness, begins to understand, it begins to learn what the kind of pieces of that experience of awareness are. It begins to recognize that experience itself. But that's not all that we do with this, because simply being aware of awareness often is not quite enough for many people to kind of gain a continuity. And so we not only notice that we're aware, but we also check in. What is awareness aware of? So what does it know? So there's the awareness, and then there's what awareness knows. And that's going to be many different things. It can be physical sensations, it can be sounds, it can be sights, it can be emotions or moods or thoughts. There are many different experiences that happen, and mindfulness, awareness, can be aware of all of them. And so we explore in a simple way, am I aware, and what am I aware of? So that's kind of the basic instruction, and that is supported by relaxation. Relaxing our body, relaxing our minds, that effort or that kind of allowing of a relaxation creates the conditions for that very natural capacity that we have to know that we know, that natural capacity to be aware. It creates the conditions for it to be more naturally there. So when we relax our minds, relax our bodies, basically, our minds are designed to know what's happening in the present moment when we're not lost in thoughts about past or future. It may not be quite aimed towards the wise mindfulness, that curiosity of what is it to be a human being? What is the experience of being human? And yet it helps us. So as we relax our bodies, relax our minds, there can be a very natural place or way in which that quality, that human quality of being aware, of knowing that we know, can be more easily available. And then we can start to use it to aim towards that curiosity of, okay, what is this experience? What does it feel like to be a human being sitting in this room? What does it feel like to be a human being experiencing the emotions, the thoughts, the feelings that are happening right now? So relaxation is a big part of what supports us, the conditions that support the mindfulness to begin. And this is something that I emphasize a lot. And it, you know, pretty much any time if there's any tension in your heart or mind, encouraging relaxation can be a place to come back to create the conditions that the mindfulness can more naturally arise. So another important piece around this exploration is kind of exploring a relaxed way of making effort. So the relaxation comes in not just to beginning, but the whole way in which we engage in the practice. And so I spoke yesterday a lot about a light touch of the mindfulness. So in this moment, you know, it's not that hard to be mindful in a moment. I'm going to name some areas of experience. So noticing your hands touching, noticing your feet, wherever they are, contacting the ground or chair, floor. Noticing your lips contacting. And so how hard is it, as I name each area, to know those? Was it very hard? Could you, you know, just kind of, sometimes it just pops in, just there it is. So in a moment, for a moment, being aware of a particular experience is not very hard. What is more difficult is to maintain a kind of continuity of that, to remember to keep doing that. This morning I talked about prompted mindfulness and unprompted mindfulness. The unprompted mindfulness being the very natural arising of mindfulness from being lost or not being mindful. I emphasized that a lot this morning. The kind of effort that we make in practice is using more this prompted mindfulness, but in a very light way. Often when we sit down to meditate, we may have this kind of sense of, okay, I'm going to sit for 40 minutes, so let me be mindful. And we kind of pick up the mindfulness, we kind of pick up a sense of effort that we're going to be making. And it's almost like we pick up in that first moment what we think we need to do to stay present for the 40 minutes. But our minds don't work that way. I mean, all we can pick up is enough effort to be mindful for a moment. And then do it again. Another light touch for a moment. And another light touch for a moment. And so this is a prompting, a kind of a reminding yourself when we're aware to do it again, but not by trying to pick something up that feels heavy, more just the lightest of touch, the lightest of picking up, the lightest of connection, and then do it again and again and again. And so the kind of the what we prompt ourselves with are, in this practice, we prompt ourselves with questions. Am I aware? Take a moment with that question to kind of settle in. What is this? You know, am I aware? Yes, I'm aware. You don't have to try to figure that out again, but just like take in, yep, this is awareness. And then, what is obvious? What's already here? We don't have to direct our attention, but this receptive quality that I spoke a lot about yesterday. We're receiving what's here. What is awareness knowing? What is awareness receiving? It's a lighter touch to think about receiving as well. I think sometimes as we direct the attention, aim the attention, that's a place where we tend to get over efforting in our practice where we're trying to hold on to an object or an experience, trying to hold on to the breath. Here, we're exploring more the kind of settling back, you know. It's like we're a passenger in a car, a passenger for our experience. You know, when we're a passenger, if we trust the driver in the car, you know, we can relax in the car and just, like, take in the scenery as it goes by. We don't have to be focusing on the road or aiming around the other cars or tracking the exit we need to take. We can relax and just, like, let the scenery go by. And so in a similar way, in our receptive mindfulness practice, we relax and connect with that experience of this is awareness, and let the experiences arrive. What is already happening? What is already known? So right now, in this moment, are you aware? And what's obvious? Not to go looking for what's obvious, but more just, again, settling back like you're a passenger. Like, let it come to you. It may not be obvious immediately, but maybe in this moment there's, you know, for me, there was just a moment of feeling the cool air from the air conditioning that was a thing that kind of struck my attention. And then a breath. And then seeing. And then another breath. And then hearing, just settling back and letting the experience come, moment after moment. This is, in a simple way, am I aware? What is obvious? And then, because our practice is cultivating wise mindfulness, we're curious about the experience of hearing, the experience of any emotions or feelings, and also curious about whether there's some kind of relationship to what we're experiencing that might not be so obvious. This is Saito Utejaniya calls it the attitude. What is the attitude? What is the relationship? How are we relating to experience? And so we, notice, for instance, the sound or a body sensation. And what's the relationship to that sound or body sensation? Is there some kind of liking or not liking? Is there confusion? Or maybe it's okay. Maybe it's whatever it is, it's okay. Checking into how we are in relationship to the experience. Helps us to recognize, it's actually in that place of how we are in relationship to experience that so much of our struggle with life comes in. You know, that we don't recognize how we are in relationship to experience, and we're kind of driven by those habits, those patterns of mind that like certain things, don't like other things, and we're not so aware of those habits and patterns of mind. And if we are not aware that we are paying attention to something with an attitude of how can I make this go away, or how can I get more of this, or an attitude of kind of whirling of like, what am I supposed to be doing? If we're not aware of that, then that attitude is being reinforced. It's like that is what is being, what's driving what we're doing. And so the kind of checking in to that, check into how am I in relationship to experience, when we can uncover those attitudes, so we become aware, well, there's this thing happening and I don't like it. Or more than that, I got to figure out how to get rid of this thing. As we become aware of that, rather than being, when we're not aware of that, we are acting from that attitude or that relationship. We are not aware that that is an experience arising in this moment as a human experience. We are believing that as what we need to follow or do in order to get what we want. And so the checking of the attitude begins to kind of uncover or reveal things that may be operating behind the scenes and becoming aware of them. So, well, this is happening and I don't like it. That's what's going on. That's the human experience in this moment. This experience and not liking. That's a different relationship. To know that relationship of not liking, is a different thing than exploring that experience and being motivated by the not liking to fix it, to change it, to get rid of it, to whatever we do with that. So the knowing of it, the awareness of it, allows it then to become, we can become curious about it, that the attitudes or relationships as human experience. And that's a huge difference. The difference between being aware that there's anger happening and the effect that it has as a human experience and being angry, vast difference between those two. In one case, there's the possibility for the mindfulness to help us to understand the habits, the patterns of that anger, to help us to recognize the effect, the impact it has on us. When we're caught in the anger, we're often caught by the views, the beliefs around that anger, and not aware of the effect it's having on us. And so we're following through on it, and in a way, I think I said this yesterday. You know, the Buddha pointed to, with anger in particular, that anger is like picking up a hot coal to throw at somebody. You want to hurt the other person, in a way. When we're angry, we're lashing out often at the other person, and so we're picking up a hot coal to throw at the other person in order to burn them, but we burn ourselves first. And such is our mind's delusional capacity that we are not aware we're burning ourselves. And so this exploration around the relationship helps our minds to recognize, yeah, this actually is burning me. These attitudes, these habits of mind are creating tension and stress internally. And so that helps the mind to begin to orient towards a letting go of those. As we get the information that this is not helpful, as we get the information that these reactive patterns of mind hurt, our system, it's not like something we have to choose to do necessarily. I mean, we can make some choices that help us to move in the direction of letting go, but our system will help us to do that as we get this information, as we feel into the ways that our reactive emotions create stress and suffering and non-well-being in our system. Our system helps us to let it go and to move more in the direction of compassion and care and connection and wisdom and generosity and patience, a whole host of emotions that support us to be more at ease and more at peace. And so this, the delusional nature of our reactive emotions is such that sometimes we can't imagine, especially we're in the thrall of them, when we're in the thrall of these reactive emotions, it's hard to imagine why we would do anything if we didn't have these as motivators. You know, for instance, if I were to just be at peace, I mean, so why would I do anything to combat injustice if I were simply at peace? It's like, doesn't it take anger to combat injustice? That's the view of the anger. And yet what happens is we begin to feel into the way that that anger burns us and our heart begins to let it go, we don't end up just as simply these, you know, passive creatures that just kind of hang out and go, oh yeah, everything's cool, no problem, I don't have to do anything. That's not what happens. As those patterns of greed, aversion, and delusion fall away, what arises, what begins to come up are emotions and motivations, beliefs, actions based on wisdom and compassion and love and connection. And so the heart that is not struggling, not constricted, not fighting, is not a heart of passivity. It is actually a heart that acts, but from a place of connectedness and care, rather than from separation and division. And so that's just an important thing to recognize. You know, sometimes as we talk about, you know, the wanting, you know, the habit of greed being wanting to get what I want and aversion, get rid of what I don't want, that we're kind of letting go of that. Our minds sometimes just can't comprehend, well, you know, how could I not be averse to injustice in the world? And it's hard to understand how that might be the case. And we don't have to stop being averse to the injustice in the world, but we are kind of being asked to look at that aversion and understand its suffering nature here, and the way also it tends to create actions that perpetuate division, perpetuate suffering. And that maybe we begin to see, as that falls away, there's a different motivation, a different kind of action that can come when the heart is not feeling divisions and separations, but feeling connection. That feeling of connection encourages us actually to act from compassion. That was a little bit of a detour, but I do like to bring that part in, because as we look at letting go of these very deeply conditioned patterns, as we begin to observe and get curious about the experiences of these relationships of greed, aversion, delusion, in our minds, as we see those, it's humbling to see them. It also can be painful to see them. And yet the way to the letting go of them is through the being with them. You know, we'd like it if the way to the other side were to be somehow like we could transcend and just float magically over the greed, the aversion, and delusion, and get to a place of ease and peace and freedom and compassion without feeling all this difficulty. But an analogy the Buddha offered about crossing this flood. He used an analogy of all this greed, aversion, and delusion as a flood that's like sweeping us away. He used an analogy of creating a raft to cross the flood. We can stay afloat on the raft actually of the practice, the raft of the wisdom of the Buddha. But on that raft, I mean, even the image of a raft, it's kind of like, you know, a few sticks strung together, maybe with some twine, and, you know, it's probably falling apart as we're crossing. It's not like we're on some amazing yacht or something. We're on a raft, and we are getting wet on that raft. We are in that stream of greed, aversion, and delusion. We are we're contacting that flood, and yet we're afloat. We're afloat enough to be able to make the effort to keep going. And we need to be aware of when we're sinking, when we're drowning, and when we can be afloat. I talked about that some yesterday. So those are the basic pieces of the practice. There's a little bit of kind of context in there about why we're doing what we're doing. But the basic tools that we're using here is relax, recognizing that we're aware, noticing what's obvious in a receptive way rather than choosing to look for what's here. So relax, recognize awareness, notice what's obvious. And then from time to time, beginning to expose or be curious about what else might be going on in the back of our mind. Noticing the attitude, noticing the relationship.